Having heard Milton's statement and his rebuttal, we'll now hear the charge against him. It's quite a nice feeling to be in this spot and introducing Henry Hazlitt. I'm sure there are many others in this room who, like myself, first in their lives ever read reasonable and challenging economic ideas in those great 20 years that Henry was a columnist for Newsweek magazine. What a nice tradition that magazine has of economic columnists. In many of us, too, I'm sure, probably cut some economic eye teeth on a little book called Economics in One Lesson. He's also, in all, the author of 13 books. The last is Man Versus the Welfare State. That must be topical tonight. And just to prove to you that there really were some good old days, for 12 years he was an economic editorialist for the New York Times, Henry Hazlitt.
Well, you know, I wouldn't dream of falsifying a prediction by Milton Friedman, and therefore I will proceed precisely on the lines he indicated. I want to begin by saying that I am indeed opposed in principle, and I think that every conservative and every libertarian ought to be opposed in principle to any program that proposes to give a guaranteed income to everybody. And when I include in that principle not only what I would call the straight guaranteed income, but the tapered off guaranteed income, which I think is very confusingly called the negative income tax. I think we should reject any program under which the government can force the people who work to turn over their money to be paid over to people who not only don't work but won't work, or whether they work or not, to be turned over to them, deserving or undeserving, drunk or sober, without any conditions. I think we should reject any program that continues a payment unconditionally and provides permanent support for the alleged poor. Such a program is bound to undermine incentives on a wholesale scale and put a premium on idleness. It's a fundamental requirement of economic incentive, as well as justice, that the man who works for a living should be better off, always be better off, other things equal, than the man who doesn't or won't work for a living. And I think that's fundamental to keeping our system of incentives. Now, I oppose also the income tax method that Milton so plausibly puts forward as the method by which this money would be distributed. Those of us who make out an income tax go through a pretty serious investigation if we're in any high bracket at all, and we don't know how much investigation we're going to go through. I think if you let it to everybody to say how much income he had on the assumption that he was going to pay the difference, that you would never be able to know whether the so-called poor were poor or not. And you would certainly never be able to know why they're poor. And that's a very important thing. Are they poor through no fault of their own, or are they poor because they're lazy bums? Now, as a result of this thing, unless the government wants to protect itself against wholesale fraud, chiseling, and swindling beyond anything hitherto dreamed of, there is no substitute for a case-by-case investigation of the people on relief. Now, this means a means test, and this is supposed to be very humiliating. But it's a strange thing that it's supposed to be humiliating to make an investigation of a person who wants to get a handout for nothing, but it's not humiliating to ask a taxpayer to go through a very rough investigation as to paying that person that income. I think we have to put these both on the same basis. Of course, I don't believe that there should be any needless infringement of the privacy or dignity of people on relief. But I don't think there's any substitute for careful investigation on a case-by-case basis, and this is the thing that would be getting rid of. Now, I also would object very strongly to handing out relief solely in cash or even mainly in cash. It's sometimes rather frivolously said that the trouble with the poor is lack of money, and that you cure this very simply by giving them the money. And there's also the argument that you give them the money and preserve their liberty and let them make their own mistakes. Now, the trouble with this system is that most of the poor are poor not only because they don't know how to earn money, but because they don't know how to properly spend money. What happens if the money that is given out is spent for automobiles and TV sets or whatnot, and a man simply neglects to give proper nourishment to his children or to pay the rent? The last thing on earth we should ever give a compulsive gambler or a drunkard or a drug addict is cash. Suppose your gambler gets his cash and spends it in a few days. What does the government do? Does it telegraph him more? The problem is not met at all. The whole thing is that the provision of the poor, one reason is that we have to take care of people, a lot of people who are fundamentally irresponsible. And the old method of giving relief in kind is not nearly as vicious as I think it's grown to be regarded today. It's a false idea of liberty to say that the poor should get their money in cash and so on and have the right to spend it as they please. What does this say about the liberty of the people who are forced to contribute this money? From whom it is taken? From whom it is saved? What happens to their liberty under such a system? Now, of course, we always need a certain amount of taxes for the necessary and legitimate functions of government. But I contend it is not a legitimate function of government to tax the people who work to support permanently and indefinitely people who don't work or won't work. Now, I want to come to the problem of the straight guaranteed income and what I call the tapered off guaranteed income and what Milton calls the negative income tax. Of course, if you give a straight guaranteed income of, say, $3,800 a year, and I'm using the figure 3,800 because that today would be the Social Security Administration's estimate of the poverty line for a family of four. If you give this to a person, to a family with zero income, and if a person who earns, a father, let's say, earns $3,700 and then gets only $100 supplement, or if he, let's say, earns $4,000 and is only $200 better off than if he had just drunk beer all day and sat in front of a television machine, you are going to have a devastating effect on incentives. But now, so for that reason, Milton has proposed this program of a tapered guaranteed income. That is, on an equivalent basis, you would give the family with zero income $1,900, and then they could work that up to as much as $3,800, or minus 50 cents, or whatever it was, before their subsidy stopped. Now, if you make this proposal, and it's the kind of proposal we have before us, immediately there is going to be an outcry that $1,900 is not enough to support in dignity and decency a family of four, and that you should keep upping this until you get the $3,800. And I think the political forces would be such that they could not be resisted. And I'll come back further to that point. But if you did that, and paid your $3,800 under your tapering guaranteed income to a family of four, then before you stopped subsidizing them, their income would be up to $7,600. You would have to give double that amount. So that the negative income tax is on the horns of a dilemma. Either it pays only half as much as, according to its own definition, a poor family would need, or to people with zero income, or if it pays them an adequate amount, it pays twice as much to a family who have earned some income. So it either is inadequate on one end or excessive on the other, and this, I've done a lot of calculations on this, is an inescapable dilemma, and it leads to all sorts of paradoxes if you try to escape it and work it out. Now, at this point, I have a personal confession to make. I am the author of the negative income tax. in an article in the New York, not in, in the Analyst, of 30 years ago, 32 years ago, in 31 years ago, in January the 4th, 1939, the Analyst, then published by the New York Times, I came out for precisely this plan as a way of giving incentive to people on relief. And I suggested that for every dollar of self-earnings, that their earnings be reduced by 50 cents or so. Fortunately, this had no impact whatever. And I myself abandoned the idea a few weeks later when I realized that it led into precisely this dilemma. But suppose we take this a little further. The negative income tax would not erode incentives to anything like the devastating extent that a guaranteed income would, but it would erode them very seriously. If we got to the point, and it very soon will get to that point, I'm afraid, where the people on who are children. But when Americans adopt a program like this, they go to town with it, and they will take it up. So we come to the point then where the proposal will soon be made. I would have said a year ago that this is 2 years off, but now I'll say it's about 9 months off, that everybody then should get this basic full allowance, so that the Hazlitts would get it, and the Friedmans would get it, and the Gettys would get it, and the Rockefellers would get it. And we would all get this as a start. I don't need to expand upon what this is going to do in leading to a racing inflation, ruinous taxation, and national bankruptcy. I'd like to take a minute to review very, very briefly the history of our present welfare program. As all of you know, these have been proliferating at a terrific rate. They are duplicating, they are overlapping, they are growing, and we never drop any preceding program. Maybe we have, out of the hundreds of programs we have, we may have dropped one or two. My memory escapes me. But the tendency is to pile them all up and pile one on top of another. So where are we now? In the present fiscal year, the federal government, Milton just mentioned the figure of $45 billion, all money on the poor, but I'm talking about social welfare programs, which are officially so labeled. And the only thing I'm adding in these figures, I am adding farm crop supports, which I don't think are listed in this thing, and I'm listing them as welfare programs. But it includes their education, of course. But the federal government today is spending in the present fiscal year $83 billion on social welfare programs. On top of that, the states and localities are spending $60 billion, in the neighborhood of $60 billion a year, on such social welfare programs, making a total of $143 billion a year on social welfare programs. And Most of the people in this country are talking as if we hadn't yet started to do anything for the poor. Now, for a purpose of comparison, this figure of $143 billion, if comparisons mean anything any longer, is 22 times as great, 2,200% as great, as what we were spending on the same programs such as we had in 1935. Now, of course, in all fairness to Milton, and you damn well better be fair to Milton if you're trying to argue with him, he wants to... in all fairness to Milton, what he's proposing his negative income tax as a substitute for all existing programs. And the question is, now, the question is, should we consider that? Well, first of all, I regard this proposal as politically naive. Milton has been talking about political reality. Well, my God, in the face of $143 billion and the way we're dumping one program on another, can anybody believe that this program isn't going to be dumped right on top of everything else? But does anybody in this room seriously believe that the present receivers of Social Security benefits are going to give up any of those benefits? That the people who are on Medicaid are going to give up anything? That the people who are on Medicare are going to give up anything? That labor is going to give up unemployment insurance? That the farmers are going to give up crop supports? That other people are going to give up food stamps? That anybody's going to give up rent subsidies? None of these things are going to be given up. You have a revolution on your hands when you suggest reducing a relief payment from $101 to $100 in this country. The whole thing, everything would be piled on top of what already exists. And we can see this already happening in the Nixon program. When it was first announced last August, the understanding was very clear that at least it would be a substitute for the food stamp program. But then 3 months afterwards, Nixon's assistants made it clear that the food stamp program would be put on top of that, so that the amount could now go to, so far as the federal government alone is concerned, the amount of combined self-earnings and income could go to $4,699, not counting what the states would be expected to contribute. And so far as I read the bill, there would almost be compulsory contributions from the states fattening this up by a couple of thousand dollars. If we're dealing with a purely hypothetical abstract proposition, if we assume that we could get it, if we assume that we could abolish all the present forms of relief for the national income tax, would that be better than the present conglomerate? I doubt it. I don't think so. I don't think so because it explicitly abolishes any concept of dessert, any concept of whether people are trying to find, are taking jobs or not, or working at jobs or not, any concept of how they spend it or what they spend it on. And I think what would happen is, if we did abolish these other programs for the negative income tax, the negative income tax itself would grow enormously to a point of explosion. If there is one substitute that I myself would like to see or be relatively content with for the present conglomerate the proliferation of welfare programs, it would be the oldest program at all, a simple relief system, but a relief system administered and thought through on a far better basis than we have done in the past, with attention case by case to the particular needs of each family. Now, I don't think that such a problem is ever going to be solved perfectly. As a matter of fact, we face, as I see it, a problem that isn't in its nature isn't fully solvable. The dilemma we face is this: how can we mitigate the penalties on misfortune and failure without undermining the incentives to effort and success? I don't think that that question is fully soluble. I think there will have to be constantly a compromise solution as there has been in the past. But one thing I am confident of, and that is we won't solve the problem by any simple, mechanical, uniform, all-embracing gadget of some sort, or a mathematical gadget. We can't just do that. It's a very complicated problem, and we can't solve this very complicated problem by some all-embracing formula. Thanks very much.